It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Sam Wilmuth works for a rape crisis group in Morgantown, and he has a request.
I would ask the listeners to make this event less noteworthy by sitting down with their sons at the dinner table and making it clear what they value. By saying, look, it's super important to me that you treat every woman with the respect she deserves.
The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. Heroin deaths in the state have nearly doubled since 2010. In the second of four reports about how heroin is affecting West Virginia, Beneduccio reports the addiction to this drug is a difficult cross to bear for many seeking treatment, but they also have hope.
According to statistics from the West Virginia Health Statistics Center, nearly 300 people from West Virginia have died from heroin overdoses since 2001. Almost all of them were males. These deaths occur all over the state, with the five leading counties being Berkeley, Cabell, Monongalia, Kanawha, and Jefferson. Law enforcement officials say they are seeing more cases involving heroin across the state, with the drug coming primarily from Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and other nearby cities. While those officials are trying to stop the sale and use of heroin, many addicts seek treatment because they desperately want to stop. There are three medications that are used for people struggling with heroin addiction. One is methadone, which has been used widely for years. Another is buprenorphine, which some believe is very useful. The third is called naltrexone. West Virginia Public Radio spoke recently with several people who are trying to kick the heroin habit. Out of respect to their privacy, we won't be using their actual names in this story. One person who is seeking treatment is a mother from Hampshire County who comes to Morgantown to get help. She's being treated at Chestnut Ridge Center in Morgantown. Like many heroin users, her addiction began with pills.
When I started, I had a tragic event happen to me. My husband got sentenced to a five-year prison sentence, and I got stuck with my four kids and to pretty much do everything by myself. And I just started hanging out with the wrong people. I actually ended up getting a divorce from him, dating a guy that was a heroin user. At first, like I said, I pretty much did the pills, but it started snorting them. Then I started shooting them, and he introduced heroin to me. And when I shot it up for the first time, it was like it made all my problems go away. Everything was better for those couple minutes that I had that rush. Nothing could beat that rush. Once you do heroin, you'll never like another drug, in my opinion. I mean, I see people in their 50s still, you know, using heroin. For instance, my aunt does. It's hard to get away from because it's always there. You can basically go anywhere from seeing somebody at school while you're dropping your kids off to going into a grocery store and walking out and a dealer being there. It is everywhere you turn. Now, I took steps basically myself. Of course, I'm here in treatment, and I'm only 40 days clean right now, but 40 days clean for me is a lot. And to this clinic here in Morgantown basically saved my life. If I didn't have the heroin, I was instantly sick, so therefore it affected everything that I did. Like I said before, I started off at the pain medicine, and then that was too expensive, and that's why I switched to the heroin. The heroin is very cheap. It's basically has ruined my entire life. I'm scared for my kids to go to school. I mean, I'm really thinking about relocating, but then I'm thinking, well, what if it's like that everywhere? It pretty much is everywhere. The urge and pretty much triggers everywhere I went. Like I said, just going to the store was hard for me the first couple weeks because I could see people passing drugs back and forth. I've really had to learn how to work on people, places, and things, basically. And now at 40 days clean, I actually can say that I have not had any urges. And I think in my mind, I'm ready to get clean. If you're not ready, you're not going to. You got to accept that you have a problem and get help for it.
Another person seeking treatment is a man from Shinston in Harrison County whose health was severely impacted by his heroin use.
I was a needle user since I was 15, 16, and actually 2 years ago I had a stroke and almost died from using needle, a blood clot. And it's hard, you know, every day it's a struggle. And, you know, it's hard to rebuild what you had, you know, had nothing really, you know. And still I've been just being ill all day, you know, just It's really hard. It's like playing Russian roulette with your life, you know. You either choose your life or, you know, working on death, you know. It's downhill slope.
And then there's another woman, a 32-year-old from Parkersburg. She's seeking treatment for the second time.
I mean, being in college, I was a college student. I was partying. I like to party. I like to drink. I like to go out with friends. Who doesn't when you're in college? I really couldn't discern in my mind the fact of, like, the people I was hanging out with were going in a certain direction. Like I said before, I thought this is what everybody did. I thought this is what normal college kids do. You watch MTV. What are they doing? They're drinking and partying. I grew up watching that. I thought that's what you did. And I really didn't know any better. You know, the people I was around, it just seemed to be like the people I was around was just saturated with it. It was saturated with the weed. It was saturated with pills, coke. I mean, you name it, we were doing it. I got addicted to the pain pills just from using them recreationally and partying with friends and things like that, to where it became this outrageous, expensive habit and the heroin was cheaper. And by that point, I was so sick from the pain pills, I just wanted the sick to stop. And so I started shooting heroin. It's definitely the disease of elimination. As soon as it starts eliminating things out of your life and your suffering gets more and more and more, I distinctly remember, you know, that you don't have a job anymore. You don't have an income. The desperation starts kicking in. You're stealing from, you know, you're robbing your mom and your dad, you're robbing your family members. You know, how low have I sunk to get to this point that I'm stealing from people I care about? And then that guilt and shame and remorse, that cycle keeps going to the point where I'm suicidal. And actually, I think all I wanted was somebody to say, do you need help? Can I help you? And it was really that easy of like, yes, I need help. I just wanted somebody to recognize that I really, really did want help. Once all those things are gone, you know, you really start to figure out that you need something, you need help.
I asked what message they have for others who might be struggling with heroin addiction.
You're not alone. I mean, millions of Americans struggle with addiction. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It makes a lot of things harder in your life, but being in recovery, being somebody that, you know, functions in recovery every day, my life has grown exponentially. Being somebody that is a drug addict or an alcoholic, it doesn't mean that your life is over.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
Tomorrow, we'll continue the series with a look inside how law enforcement is fighting the problem and some solutions that some think might work. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:38. Partly sunny skies today, but there is a chance of rain and thunderstorms with heavy rain possible. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s. A flash flood watch goes into effect from 2 o'clock this afternoon through Thursday evening for most of the state. Rain and thunderstorms tonight and into tomorrow.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by thousands of West Virginia artists at Tamarack, the best of West Virginia, where everything is mountain made, located at exit 45 off I-77 and I-64 in Beckley. Facebook.com/TamarackWV.
Concord University senior runner Shawnee Carnett claimed her sixth All-American honor this past weekend. Although Carnett's last steps in outdoor 800-meter came up a bit short of another national championship, her college track and field career makes her the most decorated athlete ever to hit the halls at Concord. And as Jessica Lilly reports, Carnett had to defeat all of her competitors on their own turf.
According to a release, Carnett began near the back of the nine-woman field for the two-lap, eight-meter run at the 2014 NCAA Division II Track and Field Championships in Michigan. As the race neared its second lap, Carnett navigated her way towards the front of the pack, but was unable to pull out a win. She finished in second place. Still, Carnett says she has no regrets.
It's just been an incredible journey these 5 years. So, you know, I'm excited to be done because it's, you know, it's stressful. You know, you're always expected to do well, but I'm excited and sad and happy.
Shawnee Carnett came to Concord from a small town in Virginia where she was named to the All-State track and field team. But Carnett says that barely happened and she wasn't really a big deal.
You always see those athletes that are really awesome and you want to be like them, but I never thought like in two semesters here that I would get All-American, and it's just been amazing.
By finishing in the top eight in the 800-meter outdoor race, Carnett earned the honor of being named as a member of the first team All-American. As a mid-distance runner, Carnett's track and field sport is based on times, and Carnett had to overcome a few poorly timed stumbling blocks during her collegiate career at Concord. Yeah, it might seem like the six-time All-American, two-time national 800-meter champion hasn't had issues beating the clock, but behind the scenes, time wasn't always on her side. In 2009, Carnett was battling mononucleosis, an illness that can leave you feeling tired and weak for weeks or months. But then in 2010, Carnett was part of the first Concord women's cross-country team to win a championship. Then in 2011, Carnett went on to win the national title for the indoor 800 meter. But then she had to sit out to battle an injury in 2012.
You win something that big and you get so excited and you're like, I'm going to work really, really hard. And, you know, I probably worked too hard and I did too much and I got injured. And I remember crying like when I didn't make national.
In 2013, she battled a stomach virus as she claimed All-American honors with sixth place in the indoor 800. Then, just a few months ago, she claimed her second national championship in that same event.
I remember crying like maybe every day, like those weeks, you know, but coach like kept believing in me and kept believing in me. And I went to indoor nationals and I got a stomach virus. I remember thinking, you know, oh no, it happened again, but coach kept believing in me and kept believing in me.
Carnett gives a lot of credit to head coach Michael Cox, who never let her quit.
Coach is just, he's a really awesome coach. Just, I'm going to miss him a lot because, you know, he made me into the runner that I am, national champion. And the workouts are awesome. And more importantly, he believes in me, which has been, I think, in the end, that's the biggest thing that's made me who I am.
You know, just relentless, you know, and perseverance. You know, we went through a lot of, you know, ups and downs, you know, with everything. But we just kept pushing, you know, and, kept believing. Because, I mean, I knew she had it in there.
Cox says Carnett kept a structured schedule and was a coach's dream.
She just wants to win, and she does everything the right way. You know, tries everything, you know, to be right, you know. And she's an unbelievably great athlete, but just also just as equal, if not better, person.
From national championships to regular season meets, Carnett has had to defeat her competitors on their own turf. Concord University has not had a home track meet since her freshman year, 5 years ago. The rubberized track is in desperate need of repair, with large chunks of red rubber missing and easily flaking from the surface.
It's kind of sad, you know, because a lot of people have senior nights and stuff. We don't get to do anything like that. We don't get to have people come out here and watch. And there's our community here has been really great to me and really like watching me run. And they don't get to experience that because we don't have a track here. And you can't raise money. You know, you can't do a lot of things if you can't have a home track meet.
Running without the luxury of a smooth, rubberized track isn't anything new for Carnett. She says the facilities at Marion High School in Virginia weren't perfect either.
I think no matter what your obstacles are, as long as you work hard, you can make it work.
Under new leadership, interim president Dr. Kendra Baugus, Concord began raising funds to resurface the track this fall. It's not clear how much the new track will cost or when the university will reach that finish line. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly. In Athens.
Olympic trainers in Georgia and Indiana have already reached out, and Carnett says she's considering pursuing her Olympic dreams. Over the Memorial Day weekend in North Central West Virginia, a lot of skin was on display at one restaurant, but it might not be the skin you're thinking about. Glennis Board reports.
Locally owned alumni run restaurant in Morgantown, West Virginia. We try to source fresh local ingredients. We feature all sorts of great local food. We do barbecue. I like to call us new American soul food.
Walk into the Atomic Grill, a new barbecue restaurant in Morgantown, and you might be served by waitstaff with purple hair, nose piercings, or tattoos. The cook might have a blue mohawk. Co-owner Dan McCauley says it's a piercing and tattoo-friendly workplace.
Maybe like two and a half years ago, we were barbecuing brisket in the backyard and having a beer, and we said, man, we should do this for real. And so, you know, our first initial idea was punk rock barbecue. Let's put some flames on the walls, let's get some good meat, let's have a couple of beers and go for it. And it's been fun.
Maybe it's his anti-establishment punk rock background. Maybe it was growing up with five sisters. Maybe it was the fact that he has a daughter to worry about. Maybe. But when a customer filled out an online comment card suggesting his waitstaff show more skin, the Atomic Grill responded. After considering the comment, we decided, McCauley said in a press release, that as a family restaurant, the only skin we were comfortable having our staff show more of was our potato skins.
The objectification of women in this sense is just offensive. I don't think it should be something that should be tolerated. I don't think that service needs to be about showing more skin. I think it should be about hospitality and about good food.
So one of those foods in this case is the common appetizer, potato skins. During the Memorial Day weekend, workers pushed the skins to raise awareness about rape prevention. And word spread quickly. Support has poured in from all over the state, the country, and even the world.
The reaction's been almost overwhelming. The community support, seeing our faces spread across all different news outlets all over the world, just knowing that there's that kind of support for raising this sort of awareness has just been absolutely wonderful.
This Atomic Grill event is kind of an example of something that we wish wasn't a big deal.
Proceeds from the popular potato plate went to the West Virginia Foundation for Rape Information and Services, or West Virginia FRIS. Sam Wilmoth and others from the nonprofit organization were hanging out at the restaurant all weekend, passing out information ready to talk or answer questions about sexual assault.
It goes to show, I think, how thirsty people are for this kind of thing. And it hurts my heart a little bit because it, you know, we do so many things in this culture, unfortunately, to make survivors of sexual violence feel ostracized and alone when it is demonstrably true that they are not.
In West Virginia, according to FRIS, 86% of victims of sexual assault are female, and 65% are younger than 18. 95% of offenders are male. Most offenses happen in the home of either the victim or the offender. And in West Virginia, sexual assault includes stalking and harassment. There are laws in place to try and combat the prevalence of these crimes. Shelters throughout the state provide free services to help sexual assault survivors, both short-term and long-term. But Wilmoth says we need to do more to take personal responsibility within our communities.
I would ask the listeners to make this event less noteworthy by sitting down with their sons at the dinner table and making it clear what they value by saying, look, it's super important to me that you treat every woman with the respect she deserves. That's just something that Smith's or Thomas's or whoever, that's just what we do. If we just had those conversations on the regular, then we could make a pretty big dent in this issue. Because what we know is that sexual violence is all about repeat perpetration, right? It's a tiny group of people doing it over and over and over and over again. And that means that there's this huge majority of people who could help if we just convince them that merely being nonviolent by itself is not enough. So I want them to make these events less special.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clintus Board in Morgantown.
Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at wvpublicnews and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.